I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
The interesting thing about cooks in particular is cooks need short-term wins. We like a combination of both, but we really need short-term wins. It's part of why we do what we do. It's part of why we take product, you know, that in some cases is ugly and want to make it delicious and transform it into something that's appealing once plated or presented. We're putting things in a box. So we're not presenting things in a fashion that feels normal to us. But what we are able to do is provide delicious in that box.
The date is April 1st, 2020. And that is Chef Eric Williams of Virtue Restaurant in Chicago, Illinois. Our guest today on this special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman. And as always, my great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for covering the production costs of these special reports. We wouldn't have been able to deliver them to you without them. So it is April 1st. That's April Fool's Day. Nobody wanted the pranks, right? I didn't want the pranks this year. I really didn't. I woke up this morning. As I do these days, I went right to my phone to see if I'd missed anything horrible overnight. And the first thing I saw was on my Facebook feed, someone had posted a notice that our magnificent governor, Andrew Cuomo, here in New York, had declared that liquor stores were no longer essential businesses and that they were going to be shut down indefinitely in a few days. I literally woke Caitlin up to tell her the news because I knew we'd both been horrified. We've been enjoying our shot of tequila at the end of the night every day. We're running out. We need to make a run soon, or I should say we need to order delivery soon, doorstop delivery. Turned out it was a prank. That's not happening. That's not funny. I wasn't up for that. Maybe people are. As near as I can tell from what other people were posting this morning, nobody was really looking for it. And I say this as somebody who's been known, even in my adult life, to spend days, if not weeks, planning elaborate pranks. I love a great prank. I love a surprise party. I love a goof, whatever you want to call it. Not today, especially when it involves something that might have adversely affected my comfort or my happiness or how I'm coping with what's going on. So all of this is to say I've been off social media all day because I wasn't up for it. I don't know if anything has happened today of any relative import. Obviously, we're all getting reports and updates every day. But so here we are. Before I get to our featured guest, who is Chef Eric Williams, I wanted to share just a very short conversation with our friend Prithi Mistry. Prithi is an Oakland-based chef who I got to know last summer at the Food Media Lab at San Francisco Cooking School. We did a live interview together in front of an audience. It was a lot of fun. We've stayed in touch. And she is participating in a unique fundraiser on Instagram live tomorrow, April 2nd. I just noticed it on her Instagram feed yesterday, and I invited her on to quickly tell me and all of you about it. First of all, where are you? And don't let people, I know the answer, so don't give people too much, you know, apocalyptic envy at the moment, but tell people where you're calling in from.
We actually made a very wise decision without realizing it and got a cute little like 600 square foot cabin in the Redwoods last fall without having any idea that all of this would be happening in our world. So we've just been staying up here. We actually had planned a vacation the week before the shelter in place went into effect. So we've just continued to stay up here.
That sounds as lovely as anything could be right now. This was an impromptu thing. I already had a show cut for today. I noticed, and for people who don't know, you and I met and kind of publicly bonded last summer at San Francisco Cooking School. Our first extended conversation was in front of 100 people or so for this show. But I saw that you were doing, I guess, do we call it like, what do we call it? Like a demo slash fundraiser on Instagram Live tomorrow?
Yeah. I mean, I think of it kind of like a cooking class. I mean, obviously a lot of folks are cooking more at home than they ever have. It's a nice way to sort of help folks that aren't used to cooking all the time at home. Sana from Diaspora Co., which is a queer woman-owned spice company that does direct fair trade with India, asked me to do a cooking class using some of her spices, which I already use. And she's doing a bunch of them all this week, and then she's taking a break and then coming back the week after and doing some more.
That's great. It's great. And what are you going to be doing in particular? And how does the fundraising piece of this work?
Yeah. So I whip up all kinds of crazy things, but I thought that given that everyone has sort of constraints around their grocery shopping, that I'd try to make something really simple. So we're just going to make the most simple chicken curry with spices that most people might have in their own homes or be able to get at any basic grocery store. We're going to do a little technique on making naan in your oven. So, just whatever, I use the Jim Leahy, no need pizza dough recipe. I'm a big fan, but any pizza dough or even frozen pizza dough that you buy, you could use, but I think it's more about how to use your oven to get the best, closest to a tandoor quality naan out of your oven. So Diaspora is themselves, providing a certain amount of donation from their sales currently, as well as from this cooking programming. So right now they've raised about $4,200. And so for every program, there's an honorarium that generally would go to someone like myself teaching a cooking class using their spices that is donated to an organization. And then we're also asking folks to click on, and there's a link where you can go and donate to these organizations yourselves. It's sort of like honoring both the organizations that we're giving to, but also, honoring the fact that we're all giving of our time. And if you were to go to a cooking class like this, we're asking just to donate whatever, feels like the right value for you, whether that's $10 or $100, $1,000 if you want.
Doesn't hurt to ask.
Exactly. If you're going to go and take a cooking class, but from, Allison Roman did something the other day. I know Hetzel from Milk and Cardamom is doing one in a couple weeks. If you were to go to cooking class with one of us, just think about the value of that and give. And then the organizations that Diaspora are giving to are all in India. There's three organizations: Save the Children India, Milap, and Give India. They're really just helping tremendously with the crisis in terms of COVID-19 in India. So we had a political situation and a health crisis situation where about 200 million migrant workers, the government didn't really make a plan for what to do when they made the decision to just shut down everything. And so that's sort of this massive public health disaster, because all of these folks no longer have any pay or shelter. And so they're all basically trying to migrate back to their villages. So this money is going to provide some amount of financial security and just food and basic things for just daily wage workers, delivery drivers, restaurant workers, farm laborers, etc.
Well, that all sounds incredibly worthwhile. The class sounds like something I would like to do. Maybe I will do it if I don't have any Zoom.
Please join us.
If I don't have any Zoom conference calls set up during that time. I will put the link to where people need to go to do this in both the episode description for this show today on all the podcast platforms, as well as on the episode page at the AndrewTalksToChefs.com. website for today's show. So if you guys listening want to check it out, you can find the link there. And the time, Prithi, am I correct? It is 11 a.m. Pacific time on Thursday, April 2nd?
That is correct. Yes. So 11 a.m. Pacific. What is that? 2 p.m. Eastern?
2 p.m. East Coast. If you're somewhere in between, I'm sure you're used to doing that math.
And I promise to make it entertaining as well.
As always. All right, Prithi, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for calling in, Prithi. Again, that fundraiser is tomorrow, April 2nd. Please visit the episode description of this show on your favorite podcast platform for a link, or the episode page for this special report on the AndrewTalksToChefs.com website. So our featured guest today is Eric Williams. Eric is the chef owner of Virtue Restaurant in Chicago, Illinois, which has earned a ton of attention and accolades in just its first year. They are currently restricted to curbside takeaway meals. They're breaking away from their usual format and doing dishes they don't usually offer. We talk about that in the interview. Eric and I met just at the end of 2019, just a few months ago, when we connected in New York and did a full biographical interview for this show. I will link to that also on the episode description for this special report and on the page for this report at our AndrewTalksToChefs.com website. But we became fast friends. We've kept in touch. We spent a bunch of time together. I can't believe this was only a month ago. I think it was a month ago today. But we spent quite a bit of time at the Philly Chef Conference at the beginning of March. We sat next to each other at the Bobek Farm Dinner that we covered on this show a few episodes back. We walked the streets of Philadelphia together a little bit. We had a meal out together. We had breakfast at Mike Solomonoff's Zafar, his new kind of breakfast and pastry joint that he's doing with his pastry chef, Camille Cogswell. And we really just hit it off. We like each other. We have that quick kinship that you have with people who are destined to be friends of yours. So when we started doing these special reports, I wanted to ask this very sweet, thoughtful guy who I've gotten to know to come on the show and share a little about he and his family and his team at Virtue are navigating these rough waters we all find ourselves in. Here's our conversation. You're the first person we've had on these special reports from Chicago. Obviously, Chicago is one of the cities to kind of, at least in terms of dine-in or full-service dining, close down in this country as a precaution. Can you just tell me a few weeks into this sort of temporary world order? I know it may sound like a trite question, but as much as you're able to answer it, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. And my team is doing okay. I encapsulate that by saying we're doing okay today.
And by that, you mean that it's what? It's too sort of enormous or daunting to think beyond that? Like when people talk about, you know, when you drive in a storm, you drive. I remember my dad used to say to me, you always have to drive within your headlights. You can't drive. You can't outpace your headlights.
I think your dad was very wise, and that would be a very accurate way to describe the moment. Because if you're not driving beyond your headlights, you're driving in severe conditions. And that is exactly what's taking place. I almost said that's what it feels like, but it doesn't feel like anything. That's what's happening. We're being as cautious as we can physically be. We are as awake as we could possibly be and conscious of the surrounding space. And interestingly enough, the space that we're managing is only a few feet away. It's daunting not just to think about where we are, but also to think about those that are around us as we get reports from New York and then reports beyond. And, you know, many cities work in a competitive space. You know, we all strive to be the best in our immediate area. And this is a time when all competition is off the table. Empathy is at an all-time high, and people are caring and activating care in ways that I've never seen it in my lifetime.
Can you speak, if you don't mind, we chatted for a minute or two before I started recording, and you were talking about the unseen nature of, I guess, what we would call the enemy in this situation, the aggressor. But would you mind just speaking to that for a moment? Because I hadn't heard anyone talk about it quite the way you did.
Anyone that knows me knows that I am a person of faith. And Faith has a lot to do with believing in what you don't see. It's a present power that is beyond our capacity. And interestingly enough, we are dealing with a enemy that is a present power that we physically cannot see. And I don't know, I can't think of a time in my adult life when I've had to exercise this practice of faith more than I'm exercising it currently. And what it allows me to do is meditate each day. It allows me to recenter and focus on what's extremely important. And that is this hopeful space beyond my current state. And it also slows me in a way that allows me to address this one moment and one day at a time. And so I don't find myself overwhelmed often because I'm taking this in much smaller bites. And I'm also confident that we will get past this.
How's your team doing at the restaurant? How big a crew do you have there? And you guys are doing, what is it, curbside at the moment?
Yes, we're doing curbside service.
How's your team holding up? Like when you come in there, what's the vibe or the mood or the range of vibes and moods might be the more right way to ask the question. But what's the ebb and flow been of the sort of temperature of, you know, of the team?
It's consistently been an upbeat tempo. People are genuinely happy to see each other. I have not tried to gauge whether or not people are happy to see each other because of concern that someone might be ill or not. We've tried to center the energy in the space around being positive and informative. We talk a lot more about resources than we do about the escalation of the issue. And not because we're naive, but mostly because we just deem it important. I mean, you can find anything you want to find out about what's going wrong and what we can't contain. So we just try to inundate ourselves with possibility. And even in passing, the conversation from managers to our teammates has been one of gratitude. People are happy that they're active and that they're actively doing something. The interesting thing about cooks in particular is cooks need short-term wins. We like a combination of both, but we really need short-term wins. It's part of why we do what we do. It's part of why we take product, you know, that in some cases is ugly and want to make it delicious and transform it into something that's appealing once plated or presented. And so we're putting things in a box. So we're not presenting things in a fashion that feels normal to us. But what we are able to do is provide delicious in that box. So it kind of feeds our competitive spirit a little bit. You know, I never thought I'd be serving meatloaf in a restaurant and other than to my team. And so we want meatloaf to be the best meatloaf somebody eats. And there's a lot of thought that's going into meatloaf right now. We're creating games and challenges for ourselves where even though my team's wearing masks, they're smiling more. And you would ask, well, how do you know they're smiling if they have a mask on? It's interesting when someone's happy and you're talking to them, that's why the telephone is so important versus text. You can hear someone smiling. You can hear the joy in their voice. just like we can hear when someone is under duress. And I think it's a small gift or a small exchange that our team is extending to people in the hopes that they get it back. Because the information that we're hearing is not being brought with a smile. It's being brought with a level of intensity and a level of severity and a level of seriousness that is likely needed for us to take action. But it's overwhelming after you hear it played over and over and over again as you listen to the news.
Everyone has their own management rituals, styles. How have you had to adjust in your role? I mean, you've obviously the menu is one obvious thing. You just described it a little bit. But, I mean, is there still a nightly or daily staff meeting? Is there still family meal? What kind of talks are you giving to the troops as you go through this, you know, very hopefully limited, unusual, different period of time, but in the same space where you've been operating a restaurant for a while now?
There's a lot of structure in what we do on a day-to-day basis pre COVID-19. Now, there is structure, but it's not enforced structure. So yes, we still do family meal. We still expect people to get stations set on time and to listen to responsibilities. We've dialed back on our sense of urgency because the focus is ensuring that our team can pay for their day-to-day needs. The money that they're earning is their money, 100%. I mean, we're buying food and then we're paying our team and we're paying insurance. We've withheld and or deferred just about every other payment in the building. And so everyone is aware of that. There was a meeting to discuss that. And so that alone is providing a sense of both ownership and a sense of responsibility that we haven't had to manage. And so, no, we don't meet. We do the same thing every day. If someone makes a mistake, rather than send them through the questionnaire that we would send them through to force them to think, it usually ends up being, okay, let's go over this again. There's a lot more room for mistakes to happen. If somebody makes a mistake and doesn't put macaroni and cheese in a bag because someone ordered 5 and they got 4, we figure out how to get macaroni and cheese to the front door without having to interact with them. And, everybody just kind of looks around a little bit like, that sucked. And that's it. Like, there's no real dialogue about it. And everybody knows why everyone's looking around. Everybody knows that feeling, because we're all just trying to get this right. We don't want to take any extra steps. And again, it's their money. So it takes a resource to get that food from the restaurant to someone's door. So I guess it's kind of factored in a way that feels a lot more natural than how we would generally handle things. But there's a higher expectation when the restaurant is serving, when it's guest facing, night to night, and plating food. Now the expectation is still high, but it's a little loose in how we handle it. You know, if you're spending a lot of money for a meal and sitting next to someone and nothing else is going on, or you're not forced to be considerate about what else is going on in their life. Now, if your server had a bad day post this moment, pre this moment, you're like, well, why'd you show up at work? Right now, as I stated earlier, you know, people are more empathetic. And so we don't want to play on the empathy, but we do realize that it's there. And so we're just trying to meet them where they're at if not go above and beyond?
I'll tell you where this question comes from. I'm a fairly compulsive writer. I edit very carefully. I really try to deliver clean work. But I will tell you the stress of this time, although I don't necessarily feel it in an overt way or in a way that I'm aware of, I do find it affects me. I do find as my days, as I get to the back end of my days, all of a sudden typos start creeping into my work, and I'll have to tell myself to take a break. You need a break. You're not function. The organism is not functioning properly. Is that something your cooks are having to be extra aware of? Or are you telling them to kind of take it a little more slowly? Or is that something that the training is so ingrained that that's not really a factor in a kitchen of your caliber?
Pace is definitely a factor. I am not dealing with it as directly as I would be if the kitchen were in full swing. My chef de cuisine, Damar Brown, is doing an excellent job alongside my business partner, Jesus, and her pastry chef, Becky Pendola. And so in any kind of rank and file situation, everybody has like very specific roles, and we're not focusing on each other's roles so much these days. So no one wants to take the amount of interviews that I'm taking right now, or process the amount of paperwork that I have to process to figure out what grants and loans and everything else that's before us. In addition to insurance claims and so on and so forth. And so so they're handling both the guest-facing activity or guest interaction and the pacing in the building. But I could look at their body language and tell, things are getting really intense or not. And there's just not a lot of intensity, and we don't feel like there's a need for it. We're trying to provide meals for people that want the meals. That's a big part of it, right? Like, they could have went anywhere before they elected to get curb service from us. And that want interprets that they want to support us. So everything is dialed back a bit. And I will add, I got a 3-year-old at home who is very active. I'm surprised he's allowed us to do this on his watch.
You mean this interview?
This interview, yes. Because he's in the building.
Well,
he's in the compound
Please give him my thanks, and please tell him when he and I finally meet, I will find a way to make it up to him.
I totally will. And so I was saying to his mom, because they go back and forth quite a bit as she works to teach him and train him. And I get the benefit, because they get up earlier than I do, to listen to them interact. And there's something special about listening to children work through space, like what they deem important and what they don't deem important and how they need to challenge things. And that, coupled with his voice, it brings joy to me, and it adds purpose. I guess I would be remiss, since I'm talking about him, to say this one thing. You asked me about faith, and you asked me about, how I navigate. And so maybe day one or day two, my son asked my wife, what was coronavirus? And she explained to him. And he immediately folded that into his prayers. And it's a very simple prayer, but he just asked God to fight coronavirus back and to not allow it to enter into virtue, because his dad needs to cook food for people. And I heard that. It was amplified in my head, this idea that my son identifies that I need to. I don't go to work because I want to, or I don't go to work because I'm so fascinated by. But there is a need for me to usher a service to people. And that's a big deal. It's a really big deal to me. And so that enlightens me, and that inspires me every day, just thinking about that one space, that we're not just handing something to our kid by way of a legacy of faith, but that he's exercising this at a young age.
That's beautiful. Well, in addition to that, I mean, I have two children. There's a moment that I'll tell you about next time we're together privately. But there was a moment when my son, at a very young age, demonstrated tremendous emotional intelligence and tremendous empathy that knocked me on my heels. And that's in addition to the religious part of what you just described, the spiritual part of what you just described. I think the emotional intelligence for someone his age is pretty staggering. I mean, that would, I have to think that made you swell with pride.
It definitely made me swell with pride. And I'm also, just my very being, I wonder, like, you look at your kid and you say your kid's cute. And then you wonder, is my kid really cute, or is my kid cute because it's my kid? You know, my kid seems really smart or connected. The same question comes after that, you know, is it because it's my kid, or is it because they're really smart? So I don't know how to process that, because I only have one child. But I do know that there are moments that we share that are special. And in that space, it can apply to the idea that he's my kid. And it definitely applies to the fact that I feel something that I don't feel every day. So I work in the special space more than I do the intelligent or cute space. And that satisfies me. And I know that even in the midst of all of this pain and confusion, and as people are legitimately disoriented, that I can find solace in this space, knowing that my family and I are trying to connect to a space that we think is more powerful than the space that we're currently in or presently in day to day. And there's something to be said about connecting. We're all spiritual beings. I don't know, that calms me and slows me in a way as well.
Eric, thanks for taking the time to call in. Share all this stuff. I really appreciate how open and just unguarded you are in these conversations. This is our second one in not a very long period of time. The first one took place in what feels like a different lifetime in a different world, but I enjoy talking to you.
Andrew, the feeling is mutual. This is probably the slowest conversation we've ever had, because we both talk fast and a lot. And I guess it really is a sign of the time. I thoroughly enjoy engaging with you. I also find you as someone who is extremely empathetic and thoughtful, someone who hears people and processes, right? I feel like I'm being heard. But if I was listening to this and I didn't put a lot of thought into how I would talk or what I would say prior to talking to you, and I wasn't coached, I think I would want to hear something that felt slower than everything else that everyone's saying, but also something that was uplifting, you know, something that gave me a place to hit reset or recenter. And I think we may have gotten close to accomplishing that. So thank you for the platform.
Thank you so much. And that's our show for today. Thank you very much to Eric Williams for calling in from Chicago. Thanks to Prithi Mistry for coming on the show on short notice. Prithi, I would like to get you back on, as you and I talked about off air, for one of these special reports all of your own. I'm sure you have a lot to say about what we are all going through right now. I would like to hear from any of you out there with any feedback about these special reports. You can hit me up via direct message on Instagram. Our handle there is @ChefPodcast. You can also send me a voicemail or an email via the links at the bottom of the AndrewTalksToChefs.com web pages. Thanks to Wild Turkey Surprise for today's opening music and to After School Special for the music you're hearing right now. Please seek them out online and enjoy more of their music. Thank you to our engineer, Margaret Kelly, for mixing these special reports. Our thanks to Sam Pellegrino for making these special reports possible. And thanks to all of you for listening. Take care of yourselves, take a breath, and we will all get through this together. See you tomorrow.